all time in my 43 years of evaluating this stuff. I have John Elway had the highest grade ever for me. Andrew Luck was second. Peyton Manning was third. And Trevor Lawrence will be fourth ahead of Jim Kelly, who is now fifth.
The NFL draft is an American institution, but it's also a sound. And for the past 40 years, that sound, the unmistakable voice of this institution, has been Mel Kiper Jr. Mel's big board and mock drafts have become a rite of spring, a yearly ritual signaling that your team will soon be on the clock. Today, we meet the man who turned his personal passion into a national obsession. And we journey inside his mind and his gut. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, April 16th. This is ESPN Daily. Mel Kiper Jr., the godfather of the NFL draft, the president of Mel Kiper Enterprises. Thank you so much for joining me, man.
Pablo, an honor to be with you. I love your work, and I'll tell you, we're so close to the draft now. I can almost hear that first pick being announced, and we can get rolling with what should be one of the most exciting drafts we've had.
Mel Kiper Jr. is an NFL draft analyst for ESPN, and he co-hosts the First Draft podcast. I can feel the electricity coursing through your veins, Mel, already, and I want to get into your latest mock draft that you dropped this week a little bit later, but first, I just need to get my own Mel Kiper scouting report straight here. How many NFL drafts are we at this point? How many have you evaluated and analyzed? What number are we up to?
We are at 43, Pablo. 43, wow. 38 on ESPN. And since age 18, that's nothing but this that I've been doing.
You've done, as a job, only this. Is that correct?
I had a couple. I worked at Kmart, and I did some things here and there through high school. But no, this is it. And I remember doing radio shows when I was 18, 19, all over the country. And everybody at the time thought I was 40 years old. Nobody knew I was 18, 19. Nobody asked. I didn't have to say what I was or what. Nobody even asked. They just thought I heard me talking football and talking draft and whatever, and thought I was 40, not 18, 19.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining you, even just out of the womb, Mel, like sounding anything different than what you sound like right now and how you've sounded for 43 years. I mean, I'm doing the math back of the envelope here. Yeah, you've been doing this thing longer than ESPN has existed, quite obviously. You have been hand in hand with the rise of an industry, of an institution, basically, a tentpole of a multi-billion dollar sport. And all of this is fascinating to me, Mel, because you helped build this, I think, as much as anybody, honestly. I mean, there are all of these mock drafts online and otherwise. There are all these Mel Kiper wannabes, all these Mel Kiper imitators, literal and figurative.
Oh, Todd, I have to disagree with you, Todd. I take a look at a standard cup of hot Joe that compared to the dynamic, hard-hitting, electric, cold beverage like an iced mocha frappuccino out Seattle, the star.
I actually just want to ask you about the people who do impressions of you. Are you comfortable with that? How comfortable did you become over time with people imitating Mel Kiper?
I think it's great, Pablo. And to go back to 1983, 84, when I was first doing ESPN, I did not sound like this.
With us this draft, Mel Kiper Jr., who is kind of an expert at a man who can tell us who the best athlete who will be available. You may know.
I was talking about the Buffalo Bills. Should maybe think about trading down.
I think definitely, Chris. You're looking at the Jets with four choices inside the first 39 selections. They have a number.
Yeah, you think I was on a golf course. I was talking so low.
And I think that 10th selection in the first round will dictate which direction they go with the 15th. They take a Rick Bryan with the first choice and a defensive back second, and maybe possibly a Russell Carter with the 10th choice.
I had very little experience. I was on a boomer, just said, talk to me like we're sitting here having fun. And Bob Lee was anchoring it, and it was me and Chris Berman, and we had fun. But I was not speaking like I do now, and I progressed through the years, I guess. But in terms of what it was then, Pablo, and what it is now, it's fun to see this, because I was dealing with critic after critic. Why are you doing this? Why are you wasting time talking about this? Nobody cares. It made a joke out of it, and they really mocked it. Talking about mock drafts, they were mocking the mocks. And to have all that negativity turned into positivity. And I think the internet had a lot to do with it, because there are a lot of voices out there wanting to be heard, and they are now. Every time I turn on a computer, it's mock draft after mock draft all over the place every day. And to see everybody having big boards and everybody talking about the draft and anticipating it and speculating on it, I couldn't be happier, because I had a vision about what it could be. Everybody told me I was nuts to have that vision, and to see it now, and really over the last, say, 15, 20 years, to see what it's become is, in a word, rewarding.
The vision, Mel, has been more than realized, it feels like. The mock draft is not just a piece of Americana, it's an institution unto itself. And I want to actually go to the draft and just how big it is now versus when you started with draft number one, because I was reading at one point that the commissioner of the NFL at the time, Pete Rozelle, he was skeptical about this entire enterprise as a television product, right?
Yes, I think he tried to basically say to ESPN, I don't really want this to be televised, and I don't know why you would want to. It almost would it be you're reading names. And I knew, I'll tell you, Pablo, I knew before that, long before that, when I was in high school, we were calling up. Remember those numbers? You're probably too young for that. We would call up numbers to just, it was like a 900 number you could call. Like, you get scores, you would call a 900 number to get the draft results. And I'd be in the middle of school and be getting the results, and I knew everybody was interested in that, and I knew it would tie college to the NFL, and I knew the NFL was the king of all sports. The only way to improve your team from one year to the next was via the draft. So I thought it could work. I thought it could be successful. I thought televising it would be a huge thing. So it's great to prove doubters and skeptics wrong, Pablo, in anything you do. And I think I went out and I set my sights on proving to everybody that there was a market for those reports, and there was a market in an industry that could be built, and an audience who would love and crave NFL draft information.
Live from the Sheraton Hotel in New York and the ESPN Broadcast Center, ESPN presents the 1980 National Football League Draft.
So the first televised draft, Mel, is in 1980, and at this point in your early career, for each draft, you're making what is known now as the Mel Kiper Draft Report. It's essentially a book that you wrote every year. It included scouting reports on all of the top college players who were entering the draft. What motivated you to create the draft report in the first place?
In April, when you haven't had football since the Super Bowl and you're craving it, what's better than bringing it all together for the draft? And there's a lot of those great small college players that people couldn't see. Remember, back when I started, Pablo, there was only one game on Saturday, at the most two. You couldn't watch college. You could watch one college football game, maybe two. That was it. So fans didn't have the ability to see these kids. So when they got the report, my draft report, they were able to read about players that were going to be drafted high that they knew nothing about and they had never seen before play. So I was always trying to give them an idea. Okay, here's what he did in high school. Here's what he did throughout his whole career in college. Here was his injury situation. Here's his stats. I wanted to bring those players to light, into focus, and to say to those people that bought that report, yeah, I'll give you my opinion, but I want you to be able to formulate an opinion based on what you're reading about how this kid got from point A to point B.
And what did these draft reports actually look like, these pieces of now sports archaeology?
A regular typewriter back in the day, which are relics now, and having to white out mistakes and doing all the different things in a copy. If I made a mistake, I'd have to type it over again. There were no computers. There was none of that. And I would have to call all the schools, spend about 5 to 10 to 20 hours a week just calling schools for basic statistical.
Oh my God.
Pablo, just basic. If I need to know how many sacks a kid had, how many receptions, you couldn't get that. You had to call the schools, and I got to know all the sports information directors that way. I built great friendships that way. I had the big, huge satellite dish on the roof of our house back on 1935 Ramblewood Road in Baltimore, Maryland, in Baltimore City. And I was able to get feeds and telecasts and broadcasts of college football games. And I was able to get NFL when you could only get the local broadcast of your local team. I was able to get all this stuff long before anybody could.
So you have this enormous physical, I assume literal, Rolodex full of numbers and names, and you're calling and you're building your databases and you're scouting via satellite and otherwise. How do you get NFL teams to care that you're doing this?
What I did was, when I would have the reports completed, I would send it to all the NFL teams, the head coaches, the GMs, the player personnel directors, and just say, hey, take a look at it. Give me any opinion, good or bad, how you think I can improve it, what you liked, what you didn't like. And I would get, Pablo, I got letters. I still have the letters. Mm. I have notes from Don Shula, from Gil Brandt time and again. I mean, Bill Walsh. I have so many letters that were written to me from various people in the NFL that was pretty amazing to look back on and see the encouragement that they provided a kid that they knew nothing about and really helped a young guy get some confidence and feel pretty good about what he was doing.
Did you ever think about working for a team specifically, Mel?
I was going to go work. This is a part of the story nobody knows. I was going to go work to work. I agreed to be an assistant to Ernie Accorsi, the GM of the Baltimore Colts, in the personnel department back in 1983. I accepted that position.
So what happened?
Well, I accepted in February, March of 83. That was the John Elway draft year. Ernie was the GM, and I had known Ernie since I was 16. I'm 22 at the time. I had no thoughts about working ever at ESPN. Remember, I'm just doing the reports. I'm doing my radio shows. Ernie said, just do your normal stuff that you do, and I'll introduce you as part of the Colts, you know, personnel department in June prior to training camp. I said, great, no problem. They drafted John Elway. They traded him without Ernie's knowledge. There was talk about the Colts maybe leaving Baltimore. He knew I was a Baltimore kid, born and raised there. And he said, I can't bring you in now. I may not be here. The team may not be here. I said, what do you want? He said, no harm, no foul. He said, nobody knows this. You and I are the only ones know this. He said, just keep doing what you're doing. Ernie called me in June. That February is when I got a call from ESPN to come up and interview for the draft job that had opened up when Bud Wilkinson, the late great coach, retired. I went up there and interviewed. I remember sitting there. They put a chair in the middle of the room, and I had six or seven people walking around. I was in the middle, asking me, what do you think about the 49er offensive line? What do you think about the Steeler front office? What do you think about this team's coach? And they were just peppering me with questions. And I answered the questions the best of my ability, went home not knowing anything. And I got a call a couple weeks later from Bill Fitz, who was producing the draft, to say, hey, we want you to be part of the draft. We'd like you to be part of doing the sports centers, doing whatever the buildup is. And that's when it all began.
All right, coming up, pumpkin pie, bathroom breaks, and the time an NFL GM called Mel out on live TV.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So I want to fast forward to the mid-90s now, because by that point, Mel, you're a staple of the NFL draft on television, of the broadcast. You have your mock drafts. You have your big board. People know about it. America cares about it. But in 1994, you get your first bit of public pushback from an NFL organization, and it comes from Bill Tobin, the GM of the Indianapolis Colts. So for people who don't know this story, this part of your lore, what was your assessment of what the Colts should be doing in the 1994 draft, and what ended up actually happening?
Well, they took Marshall Faulk, which was a great pick, and agreed with that. No problem. Marshall Faulk, great pick. We're all fine. We're moving on. They got another pick, and they took Trev Alberts, linebacker out of Nebraska. But I thought they should have taken Trent Dilfer. They had Jim Harbaugh, who was a decent to good quarterback at the time, and I felt like get a young quarterback to work in there with Jim, and Trent could be that guy, and they passed on him, and I just said what I did.
You got a problem with this move?
I think it's a typical Colt move. I mean, here's a team that needed a franchise quarterback to pass up a Trent Dilfer when all you have is Jim Harbaugh. Give me a break. That's why the Colts are picking second every year in the draft, not battling for the Super Bowl like other clubs in the National Football League.
And so Mort was doing the interview with Bill Tobin. Chris Mortensen was. And then I remember Freddie Gadelli got in my ear. When he said in my ear, he said, Mel, we're coming back to you when Mort finishes with Bill Tobin. I want you to look in this camera over here, look in your camera, and respond. I said, what am I responding to, Freddie? He said, he's ripping you.
Good question, Bill. A lot of criticism about not taking a quarterback here. Your response?
Well,
you know, we got a guy up there. Who in the hell is Mel Kiper, in a way? I mean, here's a guy that criticizes everybody, whoever they take. He's got the answers to who you should take and who you shouldn't take. In my knowledge of him, he's never ever put on a jock strap. He's never been a coach. He's never been a scout. He's never been an administrator. And all of a sudden, he's an expert. We don't have to take anybody that Mel Kiper says we have to take. Mel Kiper has no more credentials to do what he's doing than my neighbor, and my neighbor's a postman, and he doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL.
I don't remember exactly what I said, because all I was worrying about was the next few picks coming and the highlight packages that we had coming up and all that. And then I had to go look in the camera and make a comment on something I just heard.
Mel Kiper. Well, Bill Tobin, obviously, not going out to dinner tonight.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you, I'm secure in my position. Obviously, Bill Tobin is not very secure in his position. To me, it's a mistake. You cannot go with Jim Harbaugh and pass up Trent Dilfer. Forget it. That's why the Colts are the laughingstock of the league year in and year out.
April 24th, 1994, a day that will live in infamy.
I think nobody will ever forget it. I certainly won't. And it was one of those memorable days that you, like I say, you will never forget.
So let's pretend for a second here, Mel, that America, the NFL, everyone's mind, their memory has been erased, and you kind of got to reapply for the job of Mel Kiper Jr. What scouting reports, what picks have you made in the past would you put into your resume to show people, hey, I really nailed this one? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
Yeah, Eric Swan, who played semi-pro football that nobody knew about, and I brought his story to light and had a very high rating on him, ended up having a successful NFL career. It was great to see that type of thing happen. And then you remember the mistakes you made as well. But certainly any resume, you have the good and the bad. You're never going to be, if you're just putting the good, you're lying to everybody. You're going to have a lot of mistakes. You got to realize that a lot of that is the circumstances of where the player went, the situation he went to. But some are just bad evaluations, and you're going to have those. So yeah, I think you look back and you just realize that, hey, you know, Tom Brady ended a sixth round. Okay. Spurgeon Winn from Southwest Texas State was taken ahead of Tom Brady. Giovanni Carmazzi from Hofstra was taken ahead of Tom Brady. So when we all make mistakes, the NFL, it has all the resources, all that knowledge, all those opinions, make significant mistakes and blunders in the draft. So you can't let it bother you. You got to move on and realize this is a very difficult thing to do. It's not an exact science by any stretch. You got to sort of sift through all of it, work through all of it, build a consensus if you can, and make a call. And it's challenging, and that's what makes it so much fun.
So I need to get into the schedule of how you actually do the job that you are so excited to always be doing. Just set the scene for me, Mel, because let's say you're at home right now. Super Bowl 55 has just ended. The Bucks just beat the Chiefs. The offseason is upon us. Mm-hmm. What happens to you? Where do you begin? Where are you at this point in your draft process by the time the Super Bowl ends?
I'm a little crazy on that. And I really have done a lot of the work in May, June, July, August, leading up to the season. So as soon as the draft's over, right, will be May 1st. Saturday, May 1st, the draft will end with day three. Then I have that time from mid-May until mid-August to just watch players. So by the time we get to, what you said, the Super Bowl ending in early February, a lot of my work's done. So I don't have to go back and worry about a guy who may have become eligible. That's surprised. I try to go anybody that I think could be in the draft, and some of them end up not coming into the draft. But it's not wasted time because you have a pretty good idea of that player from that year, and then the next year you see how it compares. But I usually, by the time the Super Bowl ends, I wouldn't say my ratings are final, but they're close to it.
So, Mel, as I alluded to before, I've been trying to compile a scouting report on you. That's what I feel like I'm doing here at this point. And I was talking to a person who knows you very well, Field Yates, and he told me to ask you about your streak of not going to the bathroom when you're working the NFL draft on set. Tell me about the accomplishment that you have going right now.
Well, I also don't eat anything during the draft. over the 38 years, this will be 38 years at ESPN doing, I don't think you could put on one plate the food I've eaten over those 38 years. It's just a bite here, a sip of ginger ale, Canada Dry ginger ale, a Snickers bar, just to have it there, more to look at and feel good about, and maybe take a bite. No, I don't usually eat much at all. I very rarely drink a lot. And that's one of the key reasons, Pablo, unlike Todd McShay and Chris Berman, Chris would eat, drink a Diet Cokes all whole draft. And Todd's drinking his whatever protein drink or power drinks, whatever he's drinking. And no wonder they're running, because you can't do that. As far as going to the bathroom, no, my streak is intact, Pablo. In 38 years, now it's going to be 38 years, I've never left for that.
That is borderline inhuman.
It's insane is what it is, Pablo. It's insane and unhealthy. I get all that, but that's me. And a lot of things I do are insane and unhealthy. And everybody knows me, knows that, but that's life.
That brings me to the follow-up question, which I think you know is coming, which is the pumpkin pie thing. I feel like Mel Kiper superfans, they know how important pumpkin pie is to you, but there is a large, I think, portion of America that has no idea where I'm going with this. You eat pumpkin pie every single day of your life?
Every day it's available and I can get it, and it's not always available. So there's every day. I can't say honestly every day I eat pumpkin pie, because that's a lie. It's not true, because every day I can't get the pumpkin pie to be here. But I have fat-free whipped cream with pumpkin pie and a glass of skim milk as many times as I possibly can in the morning, like a breakfast to get me going. And that's it. And I've been doing that for a long, long time now, and nothing's going to be changing on that end.
So the next question is a different kind of pie, which is pizza pie. So again, I've heard this.
Oh boy.
And I need it confirmed. How do you eat pizza, Mel? Because I'm a New Yorker, man. And I just need to understand how this works in your brain.
All right. This is what I do, Pablo. I take the cheese off. I take the cheese off the pizza. Okay. And I eat the pizza with mashed potatoes. So mashed potatoes and pizza without cheese is what I do. Now, you say, and I think I'm healthy because I'm not eating the cheese, right? I don't eat the cheese. I just leave a little one there for the flavor. People say, why do you eat it? Because it's not, the cheese does give you the flavor. And I do leave a little tickle of cheese. Yeah, just a little, but it's mostly just the sauce and the dough. And then I put the mashed potatoes on it, and that's what I do.
Okay, Mel, coming up, I want to look at your latest mock draft, and I also want to ask you about the tricks the New England Patriots might have up their sleeve.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Mel, I'm looking at your last mock draft from earlier this week. Your top three, Trevor Lawrence to the Jaguars, Zach Wilson to the Jets, Mac Jones to the Niners. To me, it raises this even bigger question that I think we'll be looking back on years from now, because Kyle Pitts out of Florida gets talked about like the second coming, but I just keep seeing him tumble beneath all these quarterbacks. What is his deal? He's categorized as an offensive weapon. How special is Kyle Pitts in your eyes, Mel?
Yeah, we got to get a name for him, Pablo. I mean, it's not, I call him receiving entity. You used to call him H-backs, move tight. He's got a, maybe Superman. I don't, whatever you want to call 84, he's a special player. I don't think he'll ever live up to the hype, because everybody's talking so positively about Kyle Pitts. Good luck trying to be as good as he's really expected to be. But he's a great talent. He's a unique talent. He's a once-in-a-decade talent. He's not a tight end, so you can't really factor him in historically and say, how did he rank against all the other tight ends? Because he's that wide receiver slash tight end, but he's going to go very high. And I think he could go fourth in a trade, whether it's Miami or whoever, whether if Atlanta keeps the pick, they could certainly take him. If he gets past there, I would think Cincinnati at five has to strongly consider him. Certainly Miami at six would have to strongly consider him. So a lot of people like me have him as either the best or second best player in this draft. I don't see him lasting too long come April 29th.
So I want to turn now, Mel, to one of the most surprising predictions in your mock draft, and it's the New England Patriots trading up to number 10 to select what would be their quarterback of the future in Ohio State's Justin Fields. So what do you see as New England's priority heading into this draft?
What does New England need to do? Is New England even going to try to do anything? I think that's a fascinating part of this whole thing, because they're now the fourth team in the division in terms of quarterback. You used to dominate with Tom Brady. They were number one by miles. Now they're down in the basement. Josh Allen's the guy now. You have Tua, you have Zach Wilson. Now you got to try to figure out quarterback if you're New England. Maybe Cam Newton reverts back to the form they had in Carolina when he took him to a Super Bowl. Maybe that happens. Who knows? But I want to see what New England does to try to figure out quarterback, not only this year, but moving forward. So you imagine going from the ultimate pocket passer who had the worst vertical jump and the worst 40 time of any quarterback I've ever written up in my 43 years of doing this was one Tom Brady, the greatest of all time. And here's Cam Newton coming in, who's going to have a read option, mobility, and the athleticism and all that. So Josh McDaniels had to get used to Cam. They had to get used to what he was trying to do. Now with Justin, if they did get Justin and you have Cam, that whole changeover from Tom Brady to now a mobile athletic quarterback would already be in place. And then they could already have a head start on how to utilize a quarterback with that type of skill set.
So Mel, draft night is officially 2 weeks away. What is the most rewarding part of all of this when you look back on the sweep of your career? What's the most rewarding part of this role for you still today?
That's a great question. I would say it's probably seeing Todd McShay develop the way he is, I've always been encouraging to that and encourage everybody at ESPN to put him on the main set, move Todd up here. I never wanted to be, Pablo, the end-all, be the final say, the one that was given all the, this is the guy I like or not. I wanted somebody to debate me, and the NFL always debated me, like with Bill Tobin. Did I respect that? I had no problem with Bill Tobin. He was defending his player. He should. Todd gives me a different opinion. He's there to argue with and have fun with, and that's what I always wanted. So to see his development into a star in this industry and see all the guys you're able to work with that have great opinions and be there with Mort all these years and Adam Schefter and be there with Boomer and Bob Lee back in the day when I started. These are the people I was with that first draft, Bob Lee and Chris Berman, that created that atmosphere to feel like, okay, I can maybe be something here. I don't know what, but maybe at least continue on, not just be a one and done. They at least gave me the confidence to feel like, okay, maybe I do have a future in this industry.
Mel Kiper Jr. on the precipice of draft number 43. You know, I would wish you good luck. I would wish your stomach and your vocal cords and your bladder good luck, but I don't think you need it, man.
I need something. I'm lucky to survive this long, but thankfully for everyone, and to see you and then the star you are, you should be proud of what you've become. And like I said, I'm honored to be on your show.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Mantell, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Garrett Lang, Anthony Lapinto, Stash Sienke, Carlton Lance, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.